Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's PPSC PDP call on Monday, the 14th of February. We have Jeff Newman, Alan Greenberg, James Bladel, Avery Doria, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies today noted from Alex Kakuru, and if I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Hello, welcome everyone on Monday, the 14th of February. And so most of you have probably noticed that this morning Marika has submitted a proposed final report, or at least the latest version of it. Thank you, Marika. I know that took you a long time to do, and I think it was really well done. I know most people have not yet had a chance to go through it. I have not yet had a chance. But what we'll spend today doing is Marika will spend a few minutes just giving us kind of an overview of the major changes, at least from a structural standpoint. And then if you look, if you're on Adobe today, you'll see on the right-hand side there's identified issues for discussion. So I think we'll just go through those and see how far we can get on those. Just a reminder, all of the reports need to be published for the San Francisco meeting by a week from today. So that's Monday the 21st. In order to do that, we will have a call again this Thursday at the normal time. And all the substantive issues that you find in the report really need to be brought up on that call and finalized. And then if you could have any other edits, you know, whether they're stylistic, grammar, whatnot, in by Friday, then Marika can turn everything around by Monday. So does anybody have any questions on that?
A question, yeah, Avery. Do you want us to send in comments as we got them? Because, what, we're not to bring up anything. We're not doing that on this call, right? So we should write up and send anything?
Marika, let me ask you that question. Would you prefer to get them all in a group, or would you prefer to get them as we see them?
This is Marika. Either way, it's fine for me. I think if there are any issues that, you know, you feel should be discussed by the work team, I think, you know, get them out as you see them, because it might facilitate, you know, discussions on the mailing list. If it's just a question of you know, edits or improved language, okay, you know, group them all together, and I'll incorporate them.
Okay, and with respect to any issues today, we'll go through these identified issues, and if you see anything, then obviously we'll take note of them. Again, we have one more meeting on Thursday to kind of finish up substance, and there may be areas which are not completely final, but we'll have to indicate that in the report.
No, I was just indicating because I did take time to do a skimming read of it this morning when I saw it around 7 o'clock, so I might have some. I have some comments already, but I can wait.
Okay. Well, if there are any of the areas that we're going to go over, then bring them up. Then, if we have some time after, then bring it up. But certainly on email, and certainly for Thursday. Let's see what we can do. Okay. Anybody? Any other questions? Okay, Marika, let me turn it over to you to just take us through some of the major structural changes, and then we can go through these issues.
Yeah, so this is Marika. I mean, to the overall structure, there have been a few changes. I mean, basically the layout of the document is the same, and I think the chapters are even the same. I think the main change is to the executive summary, because as the work team discussed, they would like to see less content there. Or at least not a copy and paste of all the recommendations, but a shorter executive summary that focuses on the main changes. So what I've tried to do is basically take out some of the repetitive stuff that was in there, highlight, you know, what the recommendations intend to do, which in some cases codification of existing practices, some new approaches, but also clarification of existing rules. And I've tried to take out the key recommendations that form the new PDP, and I would like to invite everyone to have a look if people feel that this is an appropriate representation of those key recommendations. If there are any recommendations missing, should more substance be provided here, or if this is sufficient? So basically, the bulk of the recommendations have now moved to Section 2, That's where you find the complete set of recommendations and all the changes that have been made based on the discussion of the outstanding issues. So basically, I went through all the recommendations and looked at all our notes from the outstanding issues document and made all the changes. And in addition, I tracked all those changes to the Annex A and the procedure manual, trying to make sure that where we've changed recommendations, we've also changed the appropriate language in either the bylaws or in the Annex A to reflect that. So I think those are the main changes you'll find. And I've also tried to correct some inconsistencies, you know, spelling of bylaws or some minor issues where language wasn't clear. There is one thing that I haven't done yet, which is on the list of issues to discuss and that is currently covered in, I think, one of the annexes, which is the flowchart. One of the questions is, do people think it will be useful to include this in this version of the report as well? And if the answer is yes, I'll just need to have a look to see what needs to be changed compared to the previous version. I'm assuming that there will only be, you know, small changes, as it provided in any event a high-level overview, and I don't think we made too many changes from a high-level overview perspective. So when going through the document, I identified a number of issues that, you know, either we didn't address or were still question marks or where I would appreciate a bit more guidance from the work team to make sure that these are accurately covered in the document. So, and those are listed on the right-hand side. The first list were all of those as well included in the email. And there's one additional item that I thought of after sending the email that I've just added here, and hopefully we can cover as well during the call. So I think that's it from my side.
Okay, thanks, Marika. So just to emphasize that, you know, if you don't see any of the recommendations you think are kind of critical in the executive summary, or at least a reference to it, and you think it really should be called out, please let us know. It was kind of Marika's take on what she thought were the most important, and you may agree or disagree, but let's get that list hammered out. I think all of us made the comment when the initial report came out that the executive summary was too long, so I think this does a good job at narrowing that down and then focusing people on, you know, if they want all the recommendations to go to section two. And with respect to the flowcharts, Rick and I were talking earlier. I actually like the flowcharts. It's good for those that are more visual. And so I think if we can do that fairly easily, you know, even put that after the executive summary, you know, before the main substance, I think that might help. But let me open up the floor and first on the flowcharts and ask what people think about that. You all remember what the flowcharts were? I know it's a while back.
This is Aubrey. I don't have. Oh, I do have. Let me get my hand up.
Okay, sure. You can go.
I think the flowcharts are a great idea. I think they help people a lot. I think they're a good thing to have. I think we have to, you know, I'm sure that they're, you know, accurate. The main problem with flowcharts is they become ingrained, and even if something afterward changes, sometimes people don't remember to upgrade the flowcharts, and so there has to be a specific effort to make sure of that. But other than that, I think they're great.
Okay. Anyone disagree with that? Great. Then Marika, let's work on those flowcharts, and you and I could do that. And then send it around for Thursday's call so people can kind of take a glance and look at that.
Okay.
All right. So why don't we then just jump into the identified issues for discussion. So if you go to page 47 in the report, and I believe everyone should have control over the document, section 5.8. We'll go in there too. There we go. This is development and approval of the charter for the PDP. And this is, upon initiation of the PDP, a group formed at the direction of the council should be convened to draft the charter. And then it says the council should indicate the time frame within which a draft PDP charter is expected to be presented to the chair of the GNSO council. The elements of the charter should include, and then there's kind of a blank. My question to you, Rick, is at one point, didn't the working group work team address this, or?
Yeah, this is Marika. The Genius Working Group guidelines indeed include a charter template, but the template itself consists of many different elements. So the question would be whether you just want to refer to that document and say, well, you know, have a look there and pick the ones you think are appropriate. Are there any that the work team feels should be, you know, mandated to be included in the charter of a PDP team? So that's basically the basic question. You know, I said the Genius of Working Group guidelines provide a lot of detail on which elements a charter can include, with descriptions and as well as, you know, sometimes suggested language that can be considered, so that, you know, to serve as a basis. But I think the idea is that every working group would then basically look at that template and decide, you know, what is appropriate for the respective working group.
Okay, so I'm just looking for that. Where's the final working group work team report posted? It's up on the GMSO list.
This is Rick. I presume it should be there because it was recently considered by the GMSO Council. Trying to see if it's. I think we're in desperate need of our new website for a better management of documents, because it's not there.
Yeah.
Glenn, do you know at the top of your head where that document has gone?
Glenn, I was on mute. Which document is that? Sorry, I was doing something else.
The latest version of the Genius of Working Group guidelines. They were considered at the...
Oh, has that come off the front page? Sorry, that was a mistake. It shouldn't have. It has gone into... You'll find on the website announcements. Look under announcements, and it has been filed under there. Otherwise, you will find it under on that side documents. You will find GNSO Council documents, and you will find it there as well.
Thanks, Ken.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah,
and the GNSO Council procedures. Is that the one you're looking for?
No, I'm just looking for the latest version of the Genius of Working Group guidelines. It's under the announcement section.
Oh, it's under the announcements. Yes. Okay.
So this is the, okay, so it's the PDF. And
so basically
what section?
It starts on page, it's section 6.2 on page 29, which is the working group charter template.
Okay, so in the template they have a charter should name identify the working group and any sponsored motion that establishes the charter. Drafters are also encouraged to identify which version of these guidelines was referenced in the charter. Specific elements that might be included are name of the working group, appointed liaison. All right, so those are some administrative things, and then there's a mission and scope, objective and goals, deliverables and time frames, membership criteria, group formation, working group roles, functions, and duties, and statements of interest.
Jeff, it might be worth pointing out, actually, if you look at the disclaimer at the top, the working group guidelines itself identify three sections as being required for any charter. So an easy way would be just to adopt that same approach and refer indeed to the working group guidelines, unless the working group feels other parts should be required to be included as well. The ones that are required, according to the working group guidelines, is 6.2.1, which is the working group identification, 6.2.2, which is the mission, purpose, and deliverables, and 6.2.3, which is the formation, staffing, and organization. And those required elements also include all the sub-items underneath that those categories.
Well, so the next one on there, which is indicated as mandatory, is the rules of engagement, which is the decision-making methodologies and the status reporting. Try to figure out why we wouldn't recommend that as well.
Yeah,
Do you remember, do you recall, Marika, why that was not kind of mandatory?
I mean, I think it's essentially if maybe in certain working groups or drafting teams, you might not need decision-making methodologies if they're, you know, I don't know if they have tasks, you know, pulling together a kind of program or whether there's an assumption that it doesn't need to be spelled out. I don't recall exactly why that one wasn't included, but I think the discussion was basically about around having the basic elements in there, which is, you know, the mission, objective, and then how to staff or form a working group. I think they were considered the basic elements, but I don't know, maybe Avery remembers in more detail why 6.2.4 wasn't listed as a required element of a charter.
Avery, do you recall?
Sorry, my attention had wandered and I wasn't paying attention, so please tell me what.
Okay, we're looking at the working group final report, sorry, the working group work team's final report.
Yeah.
And we're trying to decide whether we should mandate any of those elements in a PDP charter.
Yeah.
And in the working group work team report, there are four sections of the charter. The first three were considered mandatory. The last one was not. The one that was not considered mandatory was the section that's entitled Rules of Engagement, which talks about decision-making methodology, status reporting, problem issue escalation and resolution, and closure and working group self-assessment. Do you have any recollection as to why that one was not made mandatory?
I believe that was one where it was seen as you could have various types of working groups that may or may not want to do that, and so it's there. Remember, most of that document is guidelines, and on anything where there wasn't an absolute certainty that you've got to have that, it was made optional. So I think it would be totally reasonable if, you know, we had something in this document, if we felt that section should be required for all PDP working groups, to say so. But basically the trend in that group was, as much as possible, make it a guideline, not a requirements document.
Okay, so what's your views on whether we should, for PDP, make that mandatory?
Would seem reasonable. In fact, a lot of the content, you know, directing that, guiding that, as it were, is in this document, or is in the, will be in the PDP guidelines. So, yeah, it would make sense to me for any particular group looking at these things to say, sure, for our purposes, when a working group guidelines are used for this purpose, and even to add an extra section. I mean, if this group felt that, you know, we needed an extra section that hadn't been recommended by the working group guidelines, that's totally within, you know, the notion that the working group had there. Those are guidelines. Those are basics. You want more, by all means, have more. And so, yeah, I don't see a problem with it at all.
So why don't we then say that the elements of the charter should include, at a minimum, those identified in the final report of the working group work team, and then cite to those? And cite to all sections, you know, cite to the specific four sections, or, you know, six, whatever, 6.1 through 6.4. That's what it is. I just accidentally.
This is Marika. Maybe it's will be better to reference the headings, because I think once this document gets approved, it gets integrated into the operating rules, and I think the numbering might change then. So maybe it's better just to list the headings.
Yes, that's good. So we'll cite to the report and say it's a minimum, right? The council could choose to include additional things if it wants. And in fact, the working group could include, they could always propose revisions to the charter and send it back up to the council, right? That's always a possibility. So why don't we just go with that? Seems like the easiest approach and makes sense. Any dissensions from that?
It's fine.
Okay. Then going backwards, actually, to page 11, recommendation 13, which actually is not on page 11. It's Wait, where is it? Hold on. Sorry. Yes, there it is. So it's number 10 on page 11. It's recommendation 13. I know that sounds kind of funny saying that, but does the PDP work team recommends that the policy development process procedure manual describe the option for the council to request that an impact analysis be conducted if appropriate or necessary prior to the vote for the initiation of PDP. Such an impact analysis could include the assessment of the impact on the public interest, the security, stability, and resiliency of the DNS, competition, consumer choice, consumer trust and consumer choice, and international participation as outlined in Section 3 of the Affirmation of Commitments. And then we have bracketed the impact on human rights. So we need to kind of put this to – we need to put this to bed because we've talked about it on a number of sessions. Did we let's see. I'm trying to think, Marika, didn't we talk about just the general notion of rights?
Yeah, this is Marika. We did discuss that, but I think then majority in the group prefer to track the language that was in the AOC, which is that first bit, and I think there the language added in brackets, I think that was supported by Avery, and I believe I think Alex was in favor of that as well. I think the idea was that the bracket, the language should be there as a way for people to comment on it, but I think if we leave it like that, I don't think people will understand that this is the option. So either we specify what the bracket language means, or another option would be just to have two recommendations, 13, and ask people what they prefer, either with the bracketed language or without it. I don't know what the best approach is to address this.
Okay, Aubrey?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will understand what bracketed means, but I think adding a footnote to wherever we include bracketed language, you know, to indicate this was, you know, this only had, you know, there was a difference of opinion, this phrase only had, you know, minority support, and et cetera, is, you know, a way to go with it. I think offering two 13s gets confusing. Would just be my view on it, and you know, leave it then for those of us that want to argue for it to send in comments arguing why, though we were in the group, we argued for it and think it's absolutely essential that it be there, and let other people send in things saying, you know, basically take the argument public, argument's probably one of those bad words we can't say anymore, but take the discussion public. Thanks.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I have a different question to ask, though.
Okay, let's finish out, let's close out this point, and then we'll go to your other question.
Sure.
So, Marika, if we take that bracketed language and put it up earlier, maybe before and international participation, keep it bracketed, but just put the footnote that Avery has kind of mentioned.
This is Marika. The only reason maybe not to do that, because I think that whole sentence comes directly from the affirmation of commitments. So if you put the human rights in, it might give the impression that belongs there as well.
Oh, okay. I'm just confused by the parenthetical.
I mean, I can take out the end and then maybe put the end after the as outlined in Section 3 of the Affirmation of Commitments or something like that, so it's clear that it's supposed to be added, and then add the footnote as Avery suggested.
Well, because I think the parenthetical, not the bracketed, but the parenthetical is kind of confusing. Why don't we just say such an impact analysis could include maybe something like elements outlined in the Affirmation of Commitments, including...
Yeah, you could also do two footnotes. International participation, footnote. This is outlined in Section 3 of the Affirmation of Commitments, and then bracket, as well as impact on human rights. In this document, bracketed language is language that was still under discussion, et cetera.
Yeah, I see. I kind of agree with that, just because the parenthetical seems a little... the parenthetical next to a bracket seems a little... much.
And the parenthetical, excuse me, that I don't have my hand up, the parenthetical is just a reference indicator.
Right. That sound okay, Marika?
Yep.
All right. Anybody else on this point, and then I'll go to Alan? Okay, Alan?
Yep. I vaguely remember we had a discussion on thresholds, you know, so that this item can't be used by members of the council essentially to defer perhaps for a long time a PDP, but I don't really recall the outcome of the discussion. Or did I imagine the whole thing?
No, you probably don't imagine it. I'm just trying to recall. When we talk about an impact, that the council could request an impact analysis, and I'm assuming if the council has to request it, it's got to be by the normal thresholds of a council.
Right, but it's a much large, it's a much smaller threshold to approve the PDP, to initiate a PDP.
Right. So if someone calls the vote for the initiation of the PDP, then it doesn't really matter what a majority of the council.
No, but this could be put. I think the issue was that it only takes a third of the council. I don't remember the exact thresholds, but under the old rules, a third. Whereas a half of the council opposing it could, in fact, force one of these studies. I think we decided that it was okay, but I'm just having a mental block that I know we discussed, but I can't really recall any outcome. So if I'm the only one concerned about it, then we can just drop it.
Yeah, Marika, do you seem to recall anything about that, or where we came out?
This is Marika. No, I don't really recall our discussion. I mean, looking at the language now, I see indeed how you could indeed prevent a vote from happening if you put forward a request for an impact analysis. But at the same time, if a majority of the council is in support of that, I would hope there's some value in doing that additional work and getting some answers to questions before people feel ready to vote on the initiation of a PDP.
Okay, I'm assuming if we had the discussion, that's the way it came out. Otherwise, there'd be other language there. And I'm just running a complete blank on it, but let's go ahead.
Okay, thanks. And if you think of, we'll check back on some of the notes too, and see if anything different for Thursday. All right, page 46, line 1364. So, give a second for everyone to get there.
What page again? Sorry.
Page 36.
36. Okay, thanks.
Line. Sorry, 46, you're right. Sorry, my reading is bad today. Page 46, line 1364. This is, upon consideration of the issue report, the GSO Council may, when necessary, vote to suspend further consideration of the issue report. Basis for suspension could include prioritization, reasons such as insufficient staff, community support available due to the ongoing PDP work, requests, and it goes on for reasons. But I don't think we talked about a threshold to apply to those votes. What we first need to talk about is an issue report. If you want to initiate the PDP at that point, we need to figure out what those thresholds are and then work out what would happen if we have two different thresholds. Right, because someone could play a game to suspend it, even though it would have enough to pass the low threshold for a PDP. So with that said, I'm just going to the bylaws now to kind of read what it says. Does anyone have the threshold memorized, RG?
No, I'd have to look it up.
Okay, I'm going there. It's just taking me a second here. Okay. That's appendix for Annex A. All All right. Here it says that the initiation of the PDP, it talks about council shall decide. Oh, wait, this is task forces. Sorry, guys. I'm looking here for the threshold. You happen to know where in the bylaws the thresholds are? I thought they were right in the...
They're not in the Annex A. I'm looking for it right now.
Well, which threshold are you talking about?
The threshold to initiate a PDP.
33% of both houses or 66% of one. It's in bylaws section, Annex A, section 3.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Okay. So, as Alan said, 33% of each house or more than 66% of one house vote in favor of initiating a PDP. So that means what would it take to suspend it, even though I guess this is before you're, or while you're voting on the PDP? And my guess is the threshold probably should be greater than what it takes to initiate it, right? Because otherwise you could have, let's say, a majority of the council votes to suspend it, but you could still have 66% of one house voting to initiate it, and then you have two competing motions.
Jeff?
Yep. Sorry, James. Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. James speaking. And Paul and I were chatting here that, or at least, you know, I can't speak for Paul, but I'm a little confused, and maybe it's just something I should have remembered and didn't. But what are we talking about when we say we're going to suspend a PDP or an issues report, that we're not going that it's not going to turn into a PDP, that it's going to be deferred until some point in the future? I mean, what exactly are we talking about here?
So remember these rules in here that talk about the timing of a vote to initiate a PDP, and we talk about that it should get voted on the next meeting
right.
If it's within 8 calendar days or if it's prior to 8 calendar days before a GNSF council meeting. And, of course, every stakeholder group or constituency, whatnot, has the right to delay that for a meeting. So let's say it gets delayed for a meeting, and then staff says, you know, look, we can initiate a PDP, we just don't have the resources to do it. Or there are people in the council that say, look, we know we want the PDP initiated at some point, but we just don't have the resources. There's too many things going on. So this is kind of to say, okay, we know what the general rule is, but let's suspend that general rule until we actually have the resources or time.
Is it suspended indefinitely at this point with no automatic coming back to council?
No, this is Marika. If you look at the second or the last part of that paragraph, it basically outlines that suspension should be accompanied by a timeline which should include when the vote for the initiation on the initiation should be taken. So it's not an indefinite suspension.
And this is from the bylaws?
No, this is in the procedure manual. It's in section 5.7 on the initiation of the PDP.
Right. So just to go back a step again, we are now saying when a vote on an issues report needs to take place on whether to initiate a PDP. We're doing that because nothing in the previous set of bylaws or any procedures had defined that. You had in some circumstances an issues report that's been out there for months before it gets voted on by the council. So we basically set this general rule, but now we're saying there should be an exception to the general rule or a suspension of the general rule if there's a bunch of reasons listed here as possible reasons, but now we just need to figure out what is that threshold. And so my point was the threshold needs to be larger than what it is to initiate the PDP, simply because if it's not, you'll have competing motions. So you could have competing. You could have one group saying they want to suspend it, and another group saying, saying no, they want to go forward with the PDP. So, Aubrey?
Yeah, I think it needs to be sort of the reverse of the PDP approval. So that if you need more than a quarter, I don't remember if the number is correct. If you need more than a quarter to establish one, then you need more than three quarters to kill one.
So essentially, it's pretty much saying a supermajority, I think, would be the opposite of...
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I wasn't remembering numbers correctly, so I didn't want to necessarily say supermajority, because supermajority is a number that wanders around a little, between 60 and 66%, and, you know, but it should be the obverse of whatever's required to establish one, would be my impression, so that you don't have, so that you don't basically cancel the ability to start a PDP by giving others the power to kill it.
Okay, so James disagrees, but I'm going to go to Alan and then to James.
Yeah, our thresholds, because of the way they were set up within the bicameral council, are not quite opposites of each other. So to, the initiation is 33 and 66, and the supermajority is 75 and 50. Essentially saying that one stakeholder group cannot veto a in a supermajority, and in this case, it would say one stakeholder group could say they want to go ahead with it, but the rest of them can overrule it.
Okay.
I think unless we invent a new threshold, I think a supermajority is what we're going to have to use.
Margie, did you want to add to that, and then I'll go to James?
Yeah, I think as staff, we kind of grappled with this, I think when we were trying to understand what the different possibilities were for terminating a PDP in the connection with the vertical integration issue. And I think we looked at it the way that Aubrey looked at it. It is essentially the opposite of what the voting threshold is. This is kind of how we looked at it since we didn't have anything, you know, other than what was in the bylaws. And so, I mean, the way to look at it from that perspective would be, you know, if it takes 33% to initiate a PDP, it, you know, it has to be, you would need, if you have more than 33% to continue the PDP, if they kind of look at it the opposite, then it would continue, it wouldn't be suspended. So supermajority is not the right answer because the thresholds are different in the bylaws. It's essentially the, you know, the at least that's how we looked at it when we were trying to figure out what to do.
So that means you take you would take a vote not to suspend.
yeah, and then you follow the same threshold. That's right. That's how we looked at it.
Okay, let me go to James.
Yeah, I think Alan and Marika, or sorry, Margie, touched on my concerns. It's not that I disagree with Aubrey's statements. I think we should avoid competing thresholds, and I think originally my reaction was that we should just invert the other thresholds. But because we have multiple paths to get to passage of an issues reporting to a PDP, I don't think that our voting thresholds to pass are easily invertible because there are different methods or routes that one can take to get to a positive acceptance of a PDP. I don't think that works quite as easily as it should. So I think Alan and Margie have covered that. I'll put my hand down. Thanks.
The mind boggles how one words this, that if you choose, you can have a vote not to suspend.
Who would initiate the suspension recommendation?
I think, this is Aubrey, let me put my hand up.
Yep.
I think actually the wording might not be that difficult. If there is a proposal to suspend a PDP from any stakeholder group or constituency, make it that way, or make it from any council member, it really doesn't matter, it will require, you know, a threshold vote similar to the one used to initiate the PDP to accept the dismissal. And as you can put it all in you know, positive terms and not get too bound up in double negatives.
I would say it would take a similar...
Yeah, it would take the same threshold. Basically, a proposal to dismiss the PDP takes the same threshold as it took...
No, it's a proposal to reject.
Right, the dismissal.
Yeah, you're right.
It's kind of hard to say it completely positive.
Okay. if there is a motion to suspend, the motion can be rejected with the 33/66 vote that it requires to accept the PDP.
Yeah,
I know a lot of confused counselors, but yeah.
I think that's right.
That's why they have staff members as parliamentarians.
Yeah, but then council members will say, I didn't understand what we were voting on.
Well, that's always going to be the case.
Yeah, Margie, Marika, do you want to give some thought on how to state that? But I think the group's kind of clear on... James is putting in the chat, vote yes on rejecting the suspension or vote no on suspending the rejection.
That's right,
James. Yeah, I have to figure out the right way to phrase it. So I'll email something.
Okay. All right, but I think we at least agree. We just got to figure out how to word it. Okay, great. Timing on this next bullet point, timing of council recommendations to the board, page 27.
While you look that up, because on page 27 is basically a table we created to give an indication of the timing of the different parts of the new PEP, and most of them have a timing associated with them, or at least a minimum or a maximum. But this one, and I actually need to look back as well on the recommendation, I don't think we actually specify at what point the council recommendations or the council recommendations report to the board needs to be submitted. So I don't know if there's a timing that... the work team wants to include for, you know, I guess after the approval of the final report, at what stage or how much time is allowed for the council to develop its recommendations report and submit it to the board? Should there be a minimum or a maximum, or is there no requirement to provide any kind of timing?
So just to remind us, did we have – so I know we decided that what goes to the board should be considered by the council and should be drafted by – well, it shouldn't be a private paper to the board. I know we all decided that should be open. The council should have some sort of say in what it is. But did we decide the elements of that board report?
This is Marika. The recommendation that relates to the board report is recommendation 40, people want to look back. And what we actually say there, we don't actually say specifically what should be in there. We just say that... I'm just looking here. I mean, it does talk about the fact that, of course, your staff might still submit a separate report. That's not excluded from the option, but that should become public or preferably apart from any privileged information there. It just talks about the fact that the Genius Council is responsible for the board report, either as author of the report or to approve the report before it's sent to the board. A board report on PDP should be delivered from the GNSO Council directly to the board, and if any summaries or addenda are needed, that should be the responsibility of the council with the help of the working group if necessary. And it talks a bit about the staff reports that are submitted and that these should be disclosed. But it doesn't talk about what should be in such a report, nor does it talk about the timing or at what time that report should be submitted to the board following adoption of a report.
Okay, so should we talk a few minutes about what should be in that report, and then maybe timing will kind of flow from there? So in the current reports that go to the board from a PDP, can Marika, you or Margie summarize what's in there aside from like a staff analysis? Like, what's in the staff analysis? Forget the confidential legal stuff that's in there, but what else is usually in there?
This is Margie. Usually it talks about who's in favor of the particular recommendation. It will have some. It typically will have some legal analysis as to whether there's any risks associated with it. The problem is our board format's changing, and it's changing. The legal counsel's office is changing the actual format. So what we've done in the past may not necessarily be what we do in the future. I can try to, as soon as they publish the template, I can let you guys know, but I don't know that we'll know that in the next week or so.
And this is Marika, if I can just add to that, because that is actually foreseen in the procedure manual, where it basically talks about the fact that staff should inform the genius of counsel from time to time of the format requested by the board. So actually that we might not need to define what is in there, because I think it's actually the board that defines how they want to receive their board reports.
Yeah, I guess, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to avoid the situation that we have now, which is basically, to put it in we all talked about this for weeks, it's the lack of transparency in what goes to the board. I can understand a legal analysis done by staff, by general counsel's office, and that not necessarily being completely open and transparent to everyone else. But as far as who's in favor, who's not, and a regular analysis, I'm not sure that shouldn't be open and transparent. But Margie and then Marika.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's okay for and should be done in the report to say that, specify that you want as much open and published as possible. I was merely pointing out that, and that's the direction the legal counsel's office is going. I mean, they're definitely, you're seeing that already with the board papers being published and an effort to focus on rationale, that sort of thing. But the thing I want to caution is sometimes, there may be a page limitation. There may be, a format in the sense that they want, a concise executive summary of say, a page or less or a couple paragraphs. So there might be limitations like that. And so that's why I think what Marika said in the report makes sense, that we'll, however the board says they want the reports to be received, whatever format, the GNSO Council will be informed of it, and then you can prepare the report as fits the request of the board. But, yeah, definitely making the recommendation that you want it to be open and transparent makes a lot of sense.
So what's your timing then? So when the GNSO Council passes something to go to the board, What internal deadlines do you as staff set for yourselves to kind of give us an indication of what we could put in here?
Internal deadlines is in timelines or documentary?
So if the council were to have passed something, say they passed something that's supposed to go to the board on February 24th, right, what would be your own deadlines for preparing the staff report and sending it to their board? Do you have some sort of guidelines internally?
Well, usually, we look at the board schedule to see when, when their next meeting is, and then they have, just like you have for the GNSO Council, an 8-day requirement before, that papers be done, or motions be done before the meeting, there's a deadline as well, because they need enough time to assimilate the materials before the meeting. And so it's just a question of when the council recommendation falls, versus the deadline for making the board paper.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just on the notion of the format of the board paper. I mean, once the board sets how they would like to receive their paper, I don't think, if the GNSO Council feels that, it's not, they cannot provide the right information in that way, or would omit a very important part of a report, I don't think there's nothing preventing the GNSO Council going back to the board saying, well, we know you like this format, but from our perspective, we think this is the information you need in order to, take the right decision and have a discussion on what works best. And I think part of what has come back in several parts of the report of more dialogue between the board and the council, and with the council taking responsibility for this part. The board tells staff how they would like to receive their reports and what kind of information they want to have there. In the more dialogue between board and council, I think it should be possible to discuss as well how information should be received, what is the most appropriate way, and how can the main points be communicated in an effective manner. And I think on the timing, as Margie said, from our perspective, it always depends on when the next board meeting is and how feasible it is to get it in before that date, and that's how we normally try to do it as quickly as possible. But I think from the council's perspective, you might just want to set you know, a certain timeline within which the recommendations need to be submitted, even if that misses the you know, the deadline of the board, because that's difficult to predict when their meetings are, but maybe give some kind of indication on how much time should be taken to prepare such a report and make sure that those things don't get stuck at that point, with the council taking the lead for that now and no longer staff, to make sure that there's some kind of timeline that makes sure that once the recommendations are adopted, they move ahead and get submitted to the board so, you know, the process can continue.
So why don't we just throw out the then 21 days and just say within 21 days? And then leave it at that. Thoughts on that? That's too short?
It might be too short. This is Margie. Sorry to cut in. It might be too short because I don't remember the schedule of board meetings, but I think it's at least monthly, right? And it might, so just depending on the timing of the genus of council meeting and when the next board meeting is, it might be longer than 21 days.
Well, no, this is just us submitting a report to the board. When the board considers it is according to its own rules.
Oh, okay. Got it. Sorry.
Alan?
No, I was going to go further on board meeting schedules, which I find appalling, so I've looked at them, but it's not relevant.
Okay, so how does 21 days sound? I don't want to make it longer because, I mean, the PDP's already probably gone on for a year or so. To make it longer just seems a little extreme. Do people think it should be shorter?
You can't make it much shorter than that, not and be realistic.
Right. So why don't we say 21 days and then, but, you know, if an ICANN, what is our general rule? If an ICANN meeting falls in there, we can extend it by an extra week or so. Anyone recall that?
Yeah, it is, Rick. That language is somewhere in there, so I can find it. I think it's in.
Yeah, let's just mirror that to give the council a little extra time if there's an intervening ICANN meeting or face-to-face meeting.
So based on the discussion, I'll then update as well recommendation 40 to make sure that it reflects that language of the 21 days and, you know, possible 7 days extension if it falls within an ICANN meeting. I mean, in one way, I don't think we need the ICANN meeting because normally it gets adopted at a council meeting and they would be normally 3 weeks before an ICANN meeting takes place or at the ICANN meeting itself. But, well, I mean, I don't think it matters adding it anymore.
Right. Well, and then the question is, do we need a majority of the council to approve what goes in that report?
I would think so. I don't think there's any harm in using a majority as opposed to the supermajority necessary to approve it.
Yeah, because I think if you have the super, you have just, yeah. All right, Aubrey, sorry.
Yeah, I would think that you don't need to get to supermajority. You're just approving the report and its accuracy, et cetera. Not, you know, the decisions per se. So I would think, I mean, hopefully that's the kind of thing you would end up normally unanimous on. But I don't know that it has to be an issue.
Okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to check whether the current language covers that, because it actually says that the Genus of Council is responsible for the board report either as author of the report or to approve the report before it is sent to the board. And I presume that in that case, as and there's no voting threshold specified, it would be the normal voting threshold.
Yeah, I think that's what needs to apply. Okay, which means that it plays a lot of games with those 21 days, right, because then you have to actually have that report done before 8 days before a council meeting, otherwise it goes to the next one, and then, of course, you could have one group that asks for that report, consideration of that report to be delayed. There's plenty of games counselors can play on that one, which do we want to do anything about or just let it go?
I mean, I presume following the adoption of a final report, that most people are eager to get this as soon as possible to the board, and I guess normally it's quite clear-cut what should be in there, but you might just want to say, you know, if possible, within 21 days, and just noting that this is currently on the discretion of the council, noting that it would be nice if this is done as soon as possible so the process can continue, but, you know, leaving that flexibility, you know, as you said, if it needs to be reviewed and if there are issues or where people do disagree, what is in there, that you have the time to work those issues out.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I just foresee instances where there may be one group that doesn't like what the outcome is and they'll just delay it even more, but I guess that's something for the council to deal with. We can't prescribe every situation. Okay. That makes sense. All right, let's go to the next one. Executive summary. Note that the key recommendations have been listed. Okay, we talked about this. Flowchart we talked about. Okay, last bullet point. Duration of public comment period following publication of the report.
Yeah, this is Marika. So I'm talking about our report, so how long we want to put this out for public comment, because the idea is to publish it on Monday and at the same time open the public comment forum. So the question is, for how long do we want to have the report open for public comment?
Well, didn't we in our timeline say that we would start April 1 to review? Wasn't that if we go back to that time frame we delivered?
Let me check.
Yeah, what we said to the council. I have that too.
Yeah, we said public comment period on the draft final report. We in principle said 1st of February to the 25th of March.
Right, so if we said till the 25th of March and started it on the 21st of February, that should be enough time, right?
And this, Rick, I think the idea would be as well to really use the meeting in San Francisco to alert people to this public comment period if, you know, they haven't seen it going out beforehand, and make sure as well that they're aware of the deadline and the need to submit comments by that deadline.
Well, so what if we just gave an extra week on that? Because I think the meeting ends on the 18th. If we gave until the end of March 25th, what's a week past that? The April...
1st of April?
Is that what it is?
Yes.
What if we did that? So that gives an extra two... Right. So that gives an extra... That gives an extra week. James?
Hi, James speaking. So just a quick question on a procedure. Can we send this directly to open the public comment, or does it need to go through the PPSC or the council first and be approved by them?
This can go directly to public comment.
All right, thank you.
That's what we've done previously, so it's going to be made clear that it's a work team report.
All right, thank you.
So why don't we do that, Marika? Does that make sense?
Yes, that's fine.
All right. So that will give a total of how many weeks public comment? That's 18th to 25th, 4th, 11th, 18th, 25th. So that's 6 weeks comment. I think that's pretty good. All right. Additional items, recommendation 42, did we talk about that or no?
Yeah. This is Marika. We didn't discuss it. We discussed this as part of the outstanding items. There's some language that staff, as you know, we're updating this report, has proposed to clarify that language on the board vote. This is the issue in relation to the board may act. And I think at that stage we suggested that maybe we should reach out to the board or to BGC to see if the language proposed, would meet what their initial intent was behind that specific language. And I don't think that actually has happened. So what I've done now, I've incorporated the language of saying, you know, we recommend this change, but the question is, you know, does the work team, you know, want to do some further outreach to discuss the specific item? Are people happy indeed with including the proposed language in the report? So that's basically the question.
Okay. Aubrey?
Yeah, this was one of the ones that I had, when reading through, had commented on. I could really understand what we were recommending here. So I was confused in reading it. We were telling them that they could only approve, and we'd need to be specific, I think we're saying, that they could only approve one that had been approved by supermajority is what we intend to say. And I'm not sure I'm in agreement with that, but I'm not sure I understand it yet.
So, Marika, what page is that?
It's on page 20, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. Page 20 at the bottom. And Avery is right. I think that the intent as the proposed clarification is that, indeed, the board can only approve a consensus policy that was approved by the required unison voting threshold, which is, indeed, I think, the supermajority vote. And
right.
We indeed had the discussion there that, you know, it's unclear now what ACT means, whether the board can actually act and on consensus policy recommendations that have not been approved by the required thresholds, or whether those recommendations or that policy would then be binding, or whether that could only be the case, indeed, if they have been approved by the required voting threshold. And there was, I think, disagreement in the work team on what the right approach was on that issue.
Yeah.
Right.
I was quite specifically on the side of, no, there had to be some threshold by which the board could even act if we majority approved it. But thanks.
Okay. Alan?
My recollection is we said we wanted an opinion from council what their current interpretation of the wording was. In other words, so that we know if we're proposing a change or not.
Yeah, and this is Marika. That was indeed what is in the notes that we're going to reach out, I think, to the BGC, but I don't think that has actually happened.
Ah.
Right, so that's my fault, I guess.
And I think at the very least we need a footnote on this one saying that there are two interpretations of the current bylaws and we're not sure which is the correct one.
Yeah, so that's, Alan, that's a little ambiguous. Sorry, because I don't think
that
there are...
what we're dealing with at the moment.
Right, but I don't think... So I think in my conversations with the contracted parties, they don't think that there are two interpretations. They think there are is only one.
we understand that.
Right, so I think if we just state it just as, you know, there are two possible ones, which one do you think, is not... I think the contracted, again, taking off my chair hat, I know the contracted parties aren't really going to give two hoots as to what council says, so I don't want it to imply that that whatever council says is the correct interpretation.
No, sorry, maybe you misunderstood. I was saying that we should put a note in saying we do not know how the board or ICANN legal counsel interprets the current wording in the bylaws, is what I said. Not how council interprets it.
Right. Or, yes, we can ask them the question how they interpret it, that's fine, but I wouldn't say that there's multiple interpretations necessarily. Aubrey?
Yeah, I'm sure I did not hear correctly, because if I heard correctly, I hear, A, contracted parties have decided that there is only one way to interpret this, and, B, they don't care what the council has to say about it. Is that really what you said, or did I totally misunderstand?
No, I think that's pretty close. I didn't say the council as the GNSO. Wait, let me. Not the GNSO council, but we don't care what the general council necessarily says.
Oh, Okay, I misunderstood which council you were saying.
You've got to spell your councils, Jeff.
Yeah, sorry. So, what's the name for words that sound alike but are spelled differently?
Prominence.
Prominence, yes. Right. Right. So I think even if the general counsel advises his board, that the board can act or can do whatever it wants, even if there's a majority. If the contracted parties don't agree with it, I would bet that that would be a dispute that would go to arbitration fairly quickly. But that said, it could just be that, we need to find out from, we'll find out from general counsel what their view is, and then there may be opinion or comment on that. Alan, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, my recollection is we did get an informal opinion that they are taking a different view from what the contracted parties are taking. If it goes to arbitration, we don't know which way it would come out. That's the whole concept of arbitration. You're betting on one way. I just think we need to be upfront in presenting this, that we are we're working against a landscape that we don't quite know what it is. I don't think we're united in what we believe it should be, and we don't know what it currently is. I think that needs to be made moderately clear in the report.
Okay, Aubrey?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Alan. We definitely need to make clear what we're asking and what's being suggested and where the differences of opinion are. I think we do know what the landscape is. I think we know that the board and the general counsel see it in a broader manner, that's it, than the contracted parties do. What we don't know is where the GNSO counsel falls on the issue. And whether, and what happens with that, though the probability is that it's deadlocked because the contracted parties will want to limit to the tighter interpretation, whereas the non-contracted parties probably, and this is just a guess on my part, would want the broader interpretation. So, but I think that's fine. We should describe it. But I do think we know where the board and legal counsel have kind of shown themselves to be, which is with a broader interpretation.
Why do you say that? I'm confused. I've not seen...
I think what we've seen from the board in terms of actions and the little bits we have gotten from staff and legal counsel indicating that they probably wouldn't see it as that limited.
I'm not sure what you're basing that on. Because it's never happened. It's never happened where there's been a proposed consensus policy that has not gotten supermajority support and only majority, and then the board has been faced to do something. So I hear what you and Alan are saying. I have not talked to this particular board or this particular general counsel on this particular issue, so I'm not sure why we can't really make that.
I think to say that we don't know is fine. I think I'm basically supporting Alan's point. I do believe I think I know, but you're right. I can't quote you chapter and verse on why I think I know it. We should, explain that there's a narrow sense and a wider sense, and we only know that the contracted parties like the narrow sense for sure, but suspect there may be support for the wider sense in the general community and elsewhere. And we can put as many weasel words in that as we want. But, yeah. Thanks.
All right, so I thought I heard something. Okay, let's drop the footnote. And then, Marika, I know this is on my plate. I need to draft something to send to the council. And do we know who's on the latest board governance committee? I guess we do. It should have come out of Cartagena.
Bruce is chairing.
We do know what I need to look it up. I'm ready if someone else knows.
Okay, so let's draft a note and, let's... Margie or Marika... Marika, you have a comment?
Yeah, this is Marika. While we're sending a note, and I presume that's not an issue where we're going to get any kind of quick feedback on, what does the group want to do with Recommendation 42? Just outline at this stage that there is a different interpretations, or it's not clear how the language should be interpreted, which, of course, has an effect then on how the language can be clarified, and take out for the moment the language that has been suggested? Or do we want to, you know, make reference to this, if the more narrow approach is taken, this might be a possible clarification at that point, or how would the group like to tackle the actual recommendation itself?
So what I would recommend is that we take out the text that you added. Instead of saying propose a following modification, you could say that the at this point, basically, we're trying to clarify what that means. And that the work team disagreed on, or the work team could not come to an agreement on the specific meaning of Section 13F. And until we understand what the meaning is, we can't really make any recommendations of whether that should stay or go or be changed, right?
So then in the... I think this is in the bylaws. What do I do with... Do I revert them back to the existing language for now, maybe with a footnote to Recommendation 42, noting that this language might get updated depending on the outcome of the discussion?
Well, I would bracket 13F. I would bracket it and say, with a footnote saying, you know, still trying to understand... seeking input as to the meaning of this section, unclear whether... this section will stay, be removed, or be modified.
Okay.
All right. Does that guy seem neutral enough? All right. So I think that's what we should do. Okay. I mean, Aubrey just has posted that Bruce is the chair. Okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. In the meantime, Rick and I will draft something to send to them. I know I said that the last time and totally spaced on that one. All right, any other questions or comments? So with that, everyone, please get any substantive issues to us before the Thursday meeting, and hopefully, you know, by Wednesday, so that people have time, a little bit of time to think about it. And then all edits and grammar, et cetera, are due close of business on Friday. So I want to thank everyone, and we're getting closer. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. Talk to you on Thursday.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.